I go back to prehistory, the story of the Byaka, who are a tribe in the basin of the Congo 13,000 years ago. You know, they're foragers. They have no private property or class. And what's interesting about the Byaka is that they consider music to be one of the gifts of the forest, and indeed one of the things that they use in their daily tasks, such as washing clothes in rivers and so on. And then I chart really the way that music splits as society splits into different classes. And music has always been used right from the ancient civilizations right through to modern capitalism. It's always been used by all sides in all of the major political convulsions of human history. And musicians have been recruited directly by some of the most backward elements in society. So I talk about the way that Hitler took the power of music very seriously and recruited a number of composers, including the very groundbreaking modernist composer Richard Strauss, directly to the Third Reich. Stalin as well, of course. Stalin had a famously complicated relationship with Dmitri Shostakovich, which I touch upon in the book.
So when did you personally first make the link between music and politics?
Well, actually, one of the key moments took place when I was a teenager. I think I was about 14 years old, and I went to a festival, and the DJ dropped a tune in between two bands, and the tune was called Free Nelson Mandela. I had never heard of Nelson Mandela. I had no idea who he was, but I knew by the end of the first chorus that I wanted him to be free. You know, that's how compelling I found the song to be. And therefore it was music that brought me to politics, or at least my interest in global politics. So for me, the two have been closely associated for a very, very long time.
The whole dance scene in the UK, which Faithless was part of, kind of came from the grassroots, I suppose, and the rave movement and the working class.
Yes, and the argument I make in the book is that actually it followed a model that had been put together by people in Northern American cities, particularly New York, Detroit and Chicago, people who had been excluded from mainstream society by prejudice, primarily by racism and homophobia and transphobia. They put music at the center of an attempt to create an alternative sense of community. The fact that people have been left out, the fact that life is tough, I think has been rather ignored by elites. But actually, some musicians are at least using popular culture to bring those issues to the table. So, for example, we've had grime, which is a new music which has emerged from the estates of London, which talks about the struggles and the harsh reality for many young people. It's not necessarily the case that we are going to experience political music in the same way the 60s generation did. It won't necessarily be a Bob Dylan character. But I do think that these new artists are talking about the challenges that we face.
So lots of examples of musicians using politics, but what about the opposite? What about those who deliberately don't get involved in politics?
There are other examples where musicians probably have quite good progressive ideas, but they keep them quiet because they're worried about the impact that airing those ideas might have on their careers. And actually, in some senses, while I think it's a mistake for them to do that, you can understand why they self-censor. Many musicians have paid a very high commercial price, and indeed some of them, I mean, I give some examples, Victor Jara in Chile at the time of the Chilean coup, 1973, right through to one or two of the musicians involved in the Arab revolutions of 2010-2011 have actually lost their lives because they were outspoken politically in their music.